This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Hanif Baharuddin. You're tuned in to the show that brings you closer to the people and places of our capital city. The 1st of October is World Cities Day, and as a show that focuses primarily on the capital, it is apt that we take a step back and think about the city from a more holistic perspective. For example, have you ever wondered how cities are planned and developed? So in this episode, we're going to explore the basics of urban planning with town planner Ehsan Zainal Mukhtar. He's the president of Malaysian Institute of Planners, and we're going to start with the question of what is actually urban planning or town planning.
So actually, town planning was the term used by the British. You can say that town planning was born in the UK, but as the world progressed, 60s, 70s, 80s, the Americans start calling it urban planning.
Is there a difference between the two?
Yeah, urban gives a better connotation in the sense of it's a larger area rather than town. Town do gives an impression that it's small. But over the years, in the profession, especially in British and in Malaysia, we use the word town planning to describe the urban planning profession. So you're a town planner, meaning if you're a town planner, you do urban planning also. Like in US, they also call it city planning. So you have this term town planning, city planning, urban planning. But I think the most appropriate word is urban planning because it describes or it addresses more complexity of the urban area. But there's also planning is also involved with land use control and even with rural planning. So in Malaysia, the actual name of the department would be Department of Town and Country Planning, meaning town planning lah.
Okay, so what are the core areas that we usually look at when it comes to planning for a city?
Now, in urban planning, a big aspect of it is urban design. Okay, so when you're talking about urban design, you would look into the environment, you would look into sustainability aspects, you would look into the main client, which is actually the community and the people. Because an urban area without its people, it's really not an urban area. So it's the people that makes up an urban area. So you would also look into aspects of the infrastructure, and I think the most important part is the carrying capacity of the town. So, if you have, let's put in the context of Kuala Lumpur, you would need to plan for, let's say now you have about 1 million people. So you would plan then for 1 million people. But if you're looking years ahead, and then you would have to take into consideration what happens when the city becomes, for example, in the next 20 years, 2 million people. So you would have to look into that larger context of planning for the future in all those areas that I spoke about just now.
All right. Okay, so is there a difference between planning for a city from the ground up versus planning for a city that has already been developed? Let me give you an example. Say, for example, back then, before PJ became a township, I'm sure people were thinking about PJ in a way that, okay, let's plan to create a small township, right? So is there a difference there between like planning for a town that has not been developed yet versus, say, for example, looking at Kuala Lumpur and planning for Kuala Lumpur for 20 years ahead?
Sure. In fact, Kuala Lumpur, when it is first planned for, or when it first existed as a rural settlement, as a mining town, So there was some form of planning, actually, to determine the commercial areas, where people stay. So you were saying PJ as an example. Actually, PJ was born out of what is called a satellite town, where people work in Kuala Lumpur and stay in Petaling Jaya. So that's what happens to PJ. But as people come in, as population comes in, there is a need to plan PJ on its own, and there's also a need to plan PJ and Kuala Lumpur as two neighboring towns, if you like. Now, the best example of a township that you start from zero would be Putrajaya. Okay, but Putrajaya was decided by the federal government then to be an administrative town. So you see, there are many examples of these towns that start from ground zero, if you like. Putrajaya being one. There's Brasilia in Brazil, and there's many other cities in the world. So the way you look at when you plan for a completely new town, usually you look at its function. Whereas when you plan for an existing town, it grows organically. It grows as a result of commercial activities. People will come in, there's job opportunities. So like in Kuala Lumpur, say since independence, and once it has been decided to be the administrative center, supported by commercial activities, population do come in, people do come in. So then you have to provide housing. Now, with housing, with the increase of population, you have got to look at the roads. You've got to look at the infrastructure. You've got to look at the facilities for the people. So maybe the start is a bit different, but at the end of the day, planning of cities, the concept is always to accommodate that population growth within the city and to ensure that it survives, it continues to thrive in a condition that is conducive for everyone in the city.
Okay, that's a good explanation there. I'm going to move on from there. Based on what you said that, for example, for existing town, apart from thinking of the people, it is also to a certain extent driven by commerce, right? Is that the norm for all the towns or all the cities in the world?
Yeah, most towns exist initially because once you have, say there's an industrial town, you know, the reason is because of its location. Kuala Lumpur, the confluence of two rivers. That's how it started as a mining town. Putrajaya started as an administrative town capital. But once you have people, you need services, right? You need schools. You need jobs. You need recreational areas. So most cities are looked from that point of view, that you have to plan as the population grows. And nowadays, when our resources is limited, so we have to look into aspects of sustainability as well. We have to ensure that the growth of the town is sustainable. You know, you can't keep on growing, and you can't grow without planning.
Okay, so before we delve deeper into that, can you elaborate a bit more on how do you, say, for example, plan for a city from the ground up? Let's use Putrajaya as a good example.
Okay, first and foremost, from the ground up, you need to know you need to understand the area, you need to understand the topography, you need to understand its location, and then you do a master plan. Now, like I said, if Putrajaya was planned to be, or like now the Indonesians are planning for a new capital, they would have to ensure there are enough provisions or land for administrative purposes. That's what you do. And you have to ensure that the land or the location that you are planning will be able to accommodate the population that you finally plan for. For example, if you are planning for Putrajaya or even the Indonesian capital to have, say, a maximum population of 2 million. So you would have to plan accordingly. You would have to designate areas in the master plan for commercial activities. You have to have designated areas for industrial activities in most towns. But in Putrajaya's case, it's because it's not plan to be strong, or its main factor is more of the administrative side. So it would have to accommodate to meet the needs of the people in terms of services, food, shopping. So it's a little bit different. But in towns like Kuala Lumpur and Johor Bahru, which is naturally a commercial center because of its location, like Kuala Lumpur, like I said, it started from a mining town and then became administrative. As the population grows, you have to serve the people. You know, once you stay in a town, right, you need shops, you need food. So a town is planned according to the needs of the people. So the major use of a township is usually residential, commercial, industrial, recreational, and needs for infrastructure, like where do you store the water, where's your power station, where do people do their recreation, where do you put schools, police station, things like that. So it's planned in a holistic manner, and you have to locate usually the services into centers, and the housing area is usually away from centers, but within walking distance or within 20 minutes walk or in a car. You have certain principles that you would have to follow too.
Is there room for a town to organically change its status? Say, for example, if Putrajaya was developed as an administrative town, due to maybe, for example, organic growth, can it then change its role to something else? And do town planners usually allow this to happen, or do they try to stick to its intended intention, why it was built?
Of course, a town can change. A town can change because of circumstances. Maybe Putrajaya, let's say initially, is still planned for an administrative centre, but the growth in Kuala Lumpur is limited, and therefore a large segment of the population would, for example, in the future, need to stay in Putrajaya. So Putrajaya would have to change purely from administrative centre and would have to have some commercial centres. Now, you have to talk of the scale, you know, because you even have small towns which are two rows of shops with a population of maybe less than 1,000. And you're talking about Kuala Lumpur and the Klang Valley, which is about between 1 to 5 million people. So the scale, when we plan a town, we have to ensure that the plan is flexible enough to meet changes. Now, that's why you have land reserved for future development. And you would also, what is the concept, is brownfield development, meaning that you redevelop areas which is probably obsolete, or areas which is run down, areas which needs to be looked back in terms of its function. So yes, we follow the plan as much as possible because we want to ensure that the infrastructure needs are met, but we can also change how the plan or how the town, we should change the plan as the town grows, because as the town grows, it changes. And we have to remember, organically growing towns would also have to adapt to its function, would also have to adapt to its context in the national environment, and also in ASEAN and also in the globe. So, you know, like Kuala Lumpur would be considered a global city, so would Singapore. So because the people who come and stay in your town, and the function of the town is not only serving the nation, but it has multinational, it functions at the global level. And now with technology, for example, most major cities are global cities because they serve similar functions but different aspects of that function, most probably, you know. So a town does not remain static. A town, no matter what it is, it will grow. And the city planners have to ensure as well that the town grows. If there are examples of towns, for example, in Perak, a lot of smaller towns have lost its function. It used to support tin mining, but it's not no more in the industry. So, you know, things change.
So how far ahead do we look into planning for a city, and what are the variable items that urban planners have to keep in mind that might change massively in the future?
Okay, for example, Kuala Lumpur now, Kuala Lumpur is being replanned, if you like. They're coming, it already has the Kuala Lumpur city plan. Now they're looking at taking Kuala Lumpur ahead in the next 20 years. The 20 years is a good time frame for you to plan for what you think will happen in the next 20 years. Now, Kuala Lumpur is already a planned township, right? But there are many things that you can do to improve, especially when you're talking about the sustainable goals and the new urban agenda, and your emphasis is on the well-being of the people. So, you know, although Kuala Lumpur is planned, the new plan will look at how Kuala Lumpur will be in the next 20 years. And, you know, because of the current issues that we face today in terms of climate change, in terms of society's losing its values. So we have to find places where the community can meet. That's the idea of an open space. That's the idea of public places. At the same time, we have to think of the population growth within the city within the next 20 years. So 20 years time frame for a city like Kuala Lumpur is fair enough as a time frame for you to plan. But the nation also, for your information, has also a national physical plan, which is looking at a township, looking at the whole country. Because you, although you plan for cities, you have to also know and plan for the rural areas. You just can't plan a city in silo. Of course, you have city planning that looks at Kuala Lumpur per se, but the national government has to look at planning for the whole country. So that's another aspect of planning, which is the policy, which is the strategy, gone.
That was town planner Ehsan Zainal Mohtar, president of Malaysian Institute of Planners, and we've been discussing the concept of urban planning in conjunction with World Cities Day. We're going for a short break. Stay tuned. I'm Hanif Baharudin, and you're listening to I Love KL on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. I'm Hanif Baharudin, and this week I'm joined by town planner Ehsan Zainal Mohtar. He's the president of Malaysian Institute of Planners, and he's been helping me understand the basic concepts of urban planning in conjunction with World Cities Day. Ehsan ended the first part by saying that while town planning is important, as a nation, we can't neglect rural planning too. So let's take a bit of a detour and explore what rural planning is.
Okay, when planning first, well, actually, we have always planned our township, even during medieval times, if you like. But you see, town grows because there is a need for people to be close by together. But you must also remember, even during the olden times, and even now, actually, you need your rural areas, you need the agriculture, you need the forest, you need water. And all this comes from the rural areas, all this comes from areas which are not spoiled, that our mountains and our hills, they provide the basic needs of everyone, including people in the rural as well as in the city. Now, what we do for rural planning is we have to ensure, if we take into the Malaysian context, right, we are losing population into the urban areas from migration, but we cannot afford to completely lose population because we need food, we need rice, we need proteins, we need our cows and our goats, and we need our chickens, and these are the activities that can be carried out in the rural areas. Now, the current trend is actually to industrialize the food industry, to industrialize food production. To a certain extent, it's okay, but it's better if we maintain the rural areas and have it for food, because our culture is also there, our heritage is also there. So, you know, if you're talking about planning the rural areas, we have to ensure that the rural areas is not lost to urbanization. So you encourage planning, you encourage growth, but you do not want to lose the rural areas. In rural planning, we look at how to ensure that our rural areas are actually protected and enhanced, because the life in the city, or everyone's life for that matter, also depends on the well-being of the rural people and the rural environment.
Mm. But apart from providing supplies to the rest of the country, rural planning also is important to sort of like maybe maintain the heritage and identity of a country, right?
So, okay, let's take an example again. Kampung Baru in Kuala Lumpur, right?
Mm.
So Kampung Baru is a heritage area in a sense that it used to be a kampung. It used to be a rural area. So we must not forget, before we became independent and before the country progressed, a lot of our settlement areas were kampungs. In fact, this is the character of our people, you know, the heritage and the culture. That's why you see in states like Terengganu and Kelantan, you know, our heritage is maintained. So when you do an urban area, even when you do a rural area, it's not purely for the food and the supplies, and it's also to ensure that our roots, you know, the culture, the things that we used to do, is maintained. We can be urbanized without losing our culture, and that link with the rural area maintains it. You know, that's why we balik kampung, right?
Mm.
During Hari Raya, Deepavali and whatnot, we go back to our parents' house, we go back to our grandparents' house, because that's where we came from, actually. And of course, a lot of these societal values are lost in the urban areas, unfortunately, because, you know, we work from 8 to 5, we go back to sleep, or we have late entertainment at night. But the slower side of living in the rural areas has resulted in our values, in our artistic view of the world, in the food that you enjoy and I enjoy, in good values that we have. So that balance must be maintained. You can't completely have, like now in the world, 70% of the population is living in urban areas, basically because of jobs and services. So we can provide jobs and services in rural areas without having the same kind of density and intensity of the urban areas. So, you know, we have to find the balance. So planners need to look at that and work closely with the authorities. I'm not saying that we don't allow people to migrate to the urban area, but definitely if the rural area gives you equal opportunity economically, and that's the country, that's the nation, that's the world, a lot of good, because like I said, when things are a bit slower, maybe we have more time to think about the humanities. So that balance, that relationship must be maintained. You know, it maybe the Chinese philosophy of yin and yang, the philosophy if you don't just put everything in one basket. That's how we look at it. Rural planning is also a strategy, and we have to maintain. See, our forests, the animals in the jungle, the natural habitat, they're all part of the system that we need to plan.
Now, I don't know whether this is a fair statement for me to say. Maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong. But if you were to associate the word development with urban planning, I guess the more fair term to use to describe rural planning is maybe preservation. Is that accurate?
I like what you're asking me now. Even development, we have to look at development in terms of, we have to change the way we look at development. Now, you can be developed physically, meaning that you have your tall buildings and you have your modern buildings and update, you know, that sort of development where you improve or the economy. But you can also develop without developing that side of it, meaning that, say, if we protect our forests and our resources, right, It doesn't mean we are not developed. Now, we are developed. We can go, if money is the thing that we need, then we can go for ecotourism. And our water, if we preserve and we take care of the quality, it can be used as a resource. We become more careful. We can sell it. You know, the state that is less developed in its urban areas can sell these resources to ensure and protect these areas. So that's also development. You know, not development is also development of good values of the people. Development is also spiritual development, you know. So you need money, yes, we need money, but we cannot be making money our sole goal in life, you know. So development is total. So we want to be developed physically in the urban areas, but we do not want to lose our values. We do not want to lose other aspects of development. So this is tough, actually. It's tough for us to put this across, so that, you know, because we live in a world or a capitalist system which everything is looked at only or mostly in the monetary form. So, like I said, even the world is changing when they realize that, look, if we go on the way we are going, as if our resources are not limited, right? We will pollute our earth, we will destroy our hills, our mountains, our forests, our water. You know, we're destroying our resources. We create disasters. You know, Pasir Gudang was one example. There's many other examples that I can quote, but I agree with you. Development has to be looked in different ways, not just pure physical capitalist kind of development.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about identity, right? And I think that's also another important aspect when it comes to thinking about planning for a town, and especially for a, you know, town like KL, right? How do you make sure that the identity of a city, the original identity of a city, is not lost when you plan for it, especially as we get more modern? I'm just thinking off the top of my head all the historical sites in KL, right? And how do you maintain these historical sites without actually, you maintain them, or you think about, you know, incorporating them into the modern identity of KL?
Okay, if I were to ask you the same question, if I were to ask the audience the same question, what makes KL KL? What makes Paris Paris? What makes Shanghai Shanghai? So each city in this world have its own identity, its own character, the culture, the weather, the way we do things, you know, we have been identified with it. So there is this aspect in town planning, which we call urban design. So in urban design, what we do is we go down to the very detailed aspects of the town, the fabric of the city, if you like. So Kuala Lumpur has its heritage area, the Bangunan Sultan Abdul Samad. which is identified with Kuala Lumpur. It's like, if you don't have that, you don't have Kuala Lumpur anymore. It's not Kuala Lumpur anymore if we start demolishing our Dataran Merdeka. You know, KL would be lost. KL would be like any other city. So KL must maintain its heritage sites, like Bangunan Sultan Abdul Samad and the buildings around that area, our mosque, Masjid Jamek. Those are buildings that we need to maintain. And of course, like I said, we have a gem in Kuala Lumpur. You know, we have two or three things that no other cities have. We have a virgin forest right smack in the city, the Bukit Nanas. So that is something that we must make sure that we preserve, because that is our identity. Now they're doing the Taman Tugu, which is, I think, very good. A lot of these areas, so it doubles up as Kaban Singh, as a recreational area, as our identity. And of course, Kampung Baru. So what the city finally decides on Kampung Baru, they will maintain. I think the plan is to have some parts of it go high rise and some parts of it to be maintained with Malay houses. But look, heritage is not only about building. Heritage is about the people. Heritage is about lifestyle. Our character in Kuala Lumpur is also about our lifestyle. So we can follow the modern cities in terms of convenience to walk, in terms of modern public transport, in terms of making the area better, better landscape, safer. These are concepts that we should go for, which are found in urban design, you know. But we cannot lose our heritage component of the city, because that is what makes Kuala Lumpur, Kuala Lumpur.
So as a town planner, if you don't mind me asking, how would you rate how KL has been developed? What are some of the things that I think KL has done well so far? And what are the areas that you think can be improved further?
Okay. To be fair, yes, KL, I think, compared to many cities in the world, has done pretty well. But you do not want to be pretty well. We want to be good. We want to be better. And I think Kuala Lumpur really needs a good public transport system. Good meaning efficient, on time, it doesn't break down, it's comfortable, it's safe, and it's a good alternative to having your own car. So public transport is one area that Kuala Lumpur needs to look into. The other areas that I think KL really needs is, like I said, its effort to maintain its heritage, its character. So we have to have strong enforcement. You know, like people who litter, industries that pollute on the fringes of Kuala Lumpur. We have to look at our planning standards. We have to ensure that the community is closer. So we have to ensure good open spaces, good recreational areas. We have them, but we need to ensure that we protect them. We need to ensure that we do better planning. We have to make sure that we can develop fast but smartly. We have to look at brownfield development. We have to get the people more involved into the planning system. They should give their inputs. You know, these are areas. So I think if there's one word that I can say what Kuala Lumpur needs to do, it's one, is the public transport. And secondly, just as important, is to get the community to participate in the planning.
One interesting observation that I've been thinking about, and especially based on what you said, is that KL is also quite unique in the sense that it's a town, but it's a town that people go to most likely work, and they don't necessarily live in KL, right? Do you think that model is sustainable?
No. We have to find ways of getting people living within the city, but the current trend is the housing within the city is not affordable. So I think the government has recognized that you need to have more affordable housing. This is something that I think planners have talked, politicians have talked, but we need to do more. We need to find ways to ensure that the commuting population is lessened. You can't get rid of people wanting to stay in PJ and Chala and working in Kuala Lumpur. That will always be a trend, but you can slow it down and you can increase the people staying in the city. So, you know, it's a multi-pronged strategy. Currently, like I said, if you take away the city's population that stays within the city, it's not a livable city. It's a dead city. So you want people to be in the city. And actually, if you talk about the B40, or if you talk about the middle to lower income, And if you provide enough housing for them in the city and the enough jobs for them in the city, they don't have to commute, even if they have to. And then it will be the public transport. See, so there will be a cost savings there, and you make the city more vibrant because there will be more services. So yes, we need to have people in the city, and we need to have policies that support the average income earner and the lower income earner to be within the city. So these are areas that the new plan must look into. How do we encourage, how do we provide more affordable housing within the city, and how do we encourage people to stay and work in the city?
Do you think that KL is overpopulated?
No, I think we talk about our footprint and our size. I think there's a lot of areas that can be redeveloped without losing its character. We still have potential, but we must ensure that the development that we do does not go... We have to be very protective of our green areas, you know, we do. You know, the old flats where it used to be 600 square foot or 400 square feet with two rooms, those are not sustainable way of living. That is not good for a family to have two rooms, one bathroom. So these are little things in urban design where we need to relook, you know. But is it overpopulated? No, we're not. You know, we still can have people staying in the city. We just need to plan better. We need to ensure, like I said, a lot of good policies are being enforced. We have to ensure that everyone has a sense of belonging within the city as well. So, you know, you do not want people to come to KL just to work and go back to sleep somewhere else. So, you know, the sense of belonging in the city then does not arise. But at the same time, we have to plan for small neighborhood centers so that, you know, you takkan nak beli gula, you want to buy sugar also, you know, grocery store, or you buy some meat. So I think there's many aspects of it. You want the city center, you want Kuala Lumpur to thrive as a commercial, as an international center, but you have to realize that there should be sub-centers, they should develop what they call the transit-oriented development, develop stations, develop smaller sub-towns within the city, which is actually happening. But you want them to be well-connected. You want people to move within the city. Maybe KL even needs to look at its boundaries, you know, to ensure that that footprint is more sustainable than the current footprint.
You've been tuning in to I Love KL, and this week we're joined by town planner Ehsan Zainal Mohtar, president of Malaysian Institute of Planners. He has helped us understand the basic concepts of urban planning in conjunction with World Cities Day. That's all we have for this episode of I Love KL. If you miss any part of the show, you can check out the podcast at bfm.my/ilovekl, our app which you can find via Google Play or the App Store, and also Spotify. Don't forget to also follow the station on Twitter at BFM Radio. My name is Hanif Baharudin, and you have been tuning in to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Join us again next week only on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.